Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, I'm very happy to have the first episode of 2025 to welcome here three very important personalities. First of all, who will be later on joining us, is Sebastian Copeland, internationally renowned photographer, adventurer, and environmental activist, who has dedicated his career to documenting the impact of climate change on polar regions. His work often bridges the gap between art and advocacy, offering a visual narrative that highlights the fragility and beauty of Earth's most vulnerable ecosystems. Copeland's photographs have graced the pages of National Geographic and exhibited in galleries worldwide, often serving as a wake-up call to the devastating effects of global warming. And therefore, it fits very well to have now Hannah Erringhaus and Kai Schlegelmilch here. Hannah Erringhaus, a visionary leader in sustainability, has made remarkable contributions through his work worldwide with organizations like Velida, World Wildlife Fund, and FUS. His expertise spans environmental stewardship, corporate responsibility, and innovative strategies for sustainable business models, marking him as a pivotal figure in driving impactful change and of someone who knows how it is to fill the bridge between company owning, profit, and sustainability. And Kai Schlegelmilch, a leading expert in environmental economics and sustainable policy, has significantly influenced Germany's environmental initiatives through his work with the Ministry for the Environment and FUS, known for his pioneering approach to ecological fiscal reform and renewable energy strategies. Schlegelmilch is at the forefront of shaping a greener future. Both individuals bring profound insights and groundbreaking approaches to sustainability. So I'm very much looking forward to having you both here. And we start welcoming both with a song selected by both, which will give us an introduction and that what is about today.
Ich wär so gern dabei gewesen, doch ich hab viel zu tun. Lass uns später weiter reden. Da draußen brauchen sie mich jetzt. Die Situation wird unterschätzt. Und vielleicht hängt unser Leben davon ab. Ich weiß, es ist dir ernst. Du kannst mich hier grad nicht entbehren. Doch keine Angst, ich bleib nicht allzu lange fern. Muss nur noch kurz die Welt retten. Danach flieg ich zu dir. Noch 148 Mails checken. Wer weiß, was mir dann noch passiert, denn es passiert so viel. Muss nur noch kurz die Welt retten. Und gleich danach bin ich wieder bei dir. Irgendwie bin ich spät dran. Fang schon mal mit dem Essen an. Ich stoß dann später dazu. Du fragst wieso, weshalb, warum. Ich sag, wer sowas fragt, ist dumm. Denn du scheinst so nicht zu wissen, was ich tu. Ne ganz besondere Mission. Lass mich dich mit Details verschonen. Genug gesagt, genug Information. Muss nur noch kurz die Welt retten. Danach flieg ich zu dir. Noch 148 Mails checken. Wer weiß, was mir dann noch passiert, denn es passiert so viel. muss nur noch kurz die Welt retten und gleich danach bin ich wieder bei dir. Die Zeit läuft mir davon, zu warten wäre eine Schande für die ganze Weltbevölkerung. Ich muss jetzt los, sonst gibt's die große Katastrophe. Merkst du nicht, dass wir in Not sind? Ich muss jetzt echt die Welt retten. Danach flieg ich zu dir. Noch 148 Mails checken. Wer weiß, was mir dann noch passiert, denn es passiert so viel. Muss nur noch kurz die Welt retten. Danach flieg ich zu dir. Noch 148.713 Mails checken. Wer weiß, was mir dann noch passiert, denn es passiert so viel. Muss nur noch kurz die Welt retten. Und gleich danach bin ich wieder bei dir.
Yes, what a series today. The first, the number one 2025 of our radio show. We started together with a song which describes very well what is about today. Welcome, Hannah Ehringhaus. Welcome, Kai Schlegelmilch, here in this show today. Great to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being with you.
Thank you. So I would like to start with just a few words about the song we have heard. Tim Benchko, a young adult, talking about that he wants to save the world. He just has to answer 148 emails before he can start with everything and has to take a flight, has to take an airplane. So is this the word, is this the idea of sustainability many young adults follow? What do you think?
Well, if I should start, thanks for the question. I think it is at least representing some of the businessness of the young people trying to do everything and all the time, whatever is feasible in order to save parts of the world. Of course, we cannot save the world as an individual, but at least to do our bits and parts to contribute to that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And before we start into the questions, I would like to introduce you once again, because it is so important what you did together, but also alone. Hannah Ehringhaus is a co-founder of the 30-year-old Forum for Ecological Social Market Economy, FÖST, together with Kai Schlegelmilch. And it shows how true pricing and fiscal policy unites environment and economy. You are both co-founder of the 30-year experience think tank Green Budget Germany, CBG, and which shows how true pricing and fiscal policy is too. You, Hannah, you were managing director in the chemical industry, BASF, which is nowadays a lot under pressure.
Yeah.
but of course, a very important industry for many branches. You were head of World Wildlife Fund International under the leadership of the late Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, Vice President of Veleda, and President of GLS Bank, both institutions inspired by anthroposophy and the idea of a better world worth living in. You're founder of several ecological NGOs. And Kai, you are a sustainable personality by heart, as I know you when we met first time. You are an ambassador for this in every little detail, from your CO2 zero house up to your style, your sustainable style of living every day, over your job working for the Ministry for Environment, over you as a book author, keynote speaker. In every little toe, you are speaking, talking, living sustainability. Far from man for the fiscal reform for sustainability, giving sustainability a better approach. I would like to ask or start with one question. I mean, there's a lot which unifies you, but I would like to start with one question. I mean, you made the path for giving sustainability an impact which could have made sustain which could have solved the challenge for sustainability, which could have solved also the meaning of sustainability in the eyes of the people, which could have solved even also the idea of if sustainability is good for employees, if it's good for prosperity and so on. Why hasn't this happened so far? Is it too complicated that people haven't understood it? Because what we now face in Germany is, from my point of view, a catastrophe.
Well, Hannah, would you like to start or?
Well, yes, because I think people no longer know, not only use the term sustainability, but sustainable development. And the majority focuses on development and not on sustainability. This is the problem.
This is a clear answer. So they have understood something, but just the half and the wrong half.
Yes, and it has become a buzzword. I remember the Prince Philip, who was the old school of British naturalists, and pollution and sustainability was not on his agenda. But he warned us and said, "Be careful. Sustainability may become a buzzword and used by many people to destroy the inv development, the environment by development." So.
Interesting, Hannah, that you are saying this with such a clear words, and because it's shocking. It's really shocking because
Yes.
exactly this is happening. Sorry,
Yes.
Kai, you just wanted to.
Right, yes,
Yes.
I'd like to add on that of course we are living in a market economy, and what's substantially wrong are the prices in a market economy, because we are subsidizing environmentally harmful activities and investments.
Yeah.
And this does not help us to do that transformation, which is necessary for keeping within planetary boundaries. And therefore, we really have to focus on correcting these invalid, not true prices by abolishing environmentally harmful subsidies, by internalizing external costs, environmental damage costs, by eco taxes, for example.
Well, I'd like to add something in the chemical industry and other industries. They made some progress, and the impact of energy and fossil energies on the product has been diminished. But if at the same time the production grows, then the effect at the end is negative.
Yes, that's right. It can't be different, right?
If you have car, if you reduce the consumption of gasoline for a car by 1 or 2 liters, 100 kilometers, but then you have some million more cars, what is the effect?
And isn't it just a two-faces philosophy? I mean, on the one hand, we all need companies like BASF. Everybody would like to or wants to have the product, not everybody, but a lot of branches. But on the other hand, they're doing that this is a black sheep, and instead of trying to find common solutions, as if we haven't found a solution of getting the colors or getting them the substances in another way, there is no solution to get rid of BASF.
Well, but if you see what keeps our, I'm afraid that in this very moment in Germany, in front of the elections, that we lose jobs in the old non-sustainable industries at a faster rate than we create new jobs in sustainable. The statistics do not yet show this phenomenon, but it will show up. So people are getting afraid that they lose their well-being, their comfortable situation. And this is, you see, nowadays we are not nationalists, we have no monarchy, we have no national pathos. What keeps the society together is security and the well-being, wealth. And if this is threatened, it will become a problem for the democratic society. And this is something where we have to harmonize the two processes, creation of new jobs in sustainable energies and the loss of jobs in the non-sustainable. It has to be harmonized.
Yes, exactly. And AI is there not the answer for that. Kai, you wanted to add something?
Yes, absolutely true, of course, on the one hand. But on the other hand, we just had a very positive news in the beginning of this year that more than 70% in the meantime in Germany of the electricity stemming from renewable energies. And this is exactly creating green jobs in this area, which we urgently need. So we successfully phased out nuclear power. We are about to phase out coal power as well. So we really helped the transformation and it works. We've done that now for 25 years in Germany and it's a real success story. And that's what I'd like to start with at the beginning of the year. You need the positive news, you know?
Yes, that's right.
Very good. Very good. There are success stories, of course, but the weights are different. Car industry and 800,000 jobs, and the new jobs in the green industries are maybe five digits or 100,000 or 200,000, but 800,000 jobs in the car industry are in danger.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, we won't fill it with the jobs created by AI for a technology, for example, because they eliminating jobs, of course, on the other hand. And if we look at the energy, isn't it still that we are buying in Germany energy from nuclear power from other countries?
Well, this is partly the case only. It depends on the season, actually. And in fact, in summertime, when France, for example, runs basically or tries to run its nuclear power plants, they lack a lot of water for cooling.
Right.
And therefore, they have to size down their operation of the nuclear power plants. And that's why then Germany comes in with the masses of renewable energies. And we are delivering France with renewable energy.
Exporting to France.
Exactly. So forget about the myth that there is not enough renewable and that we would need nuclear power.
Wow, this is, of course, good news for New Year. Because you see from the people against this politics that they have always the argument that you can't work with wind and you can't work with sun, especially not in Germany. I mean, today it looks sunny outside, but there are days where you really have to search for any piece of sun.
Still, but there are possibilities also for using renewables while there's no wind and no sun, which is it's shall the lightness. It doesn't need to be direct sun rays, but we also have biofuels, biogas, for example, and that could be a good substitute as well as hydropower, for example. So there are options which can be used even in those phases.
That's right. And this is super important to talk also about this because we have alternatives. So we go now into a small break of 2-3 minutes and we talk further and continue further about your both path, about also the important messages you have to deliver. And I'm very much looking forward to continue in approximately 2-3 minutes. So please stay tuned.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet, simply mixed with water to activate for a flavorful health drink, perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Hannah Ehringhaus and Kai Schlielmich, both individuals bring profound insights and groundbreaking approaches to sustainability, bridging the gap between policy, business, and environmental preservation. Their work inspires actionable change toward a more sustainable world, and this not just for now. It has been from both for approximately 30 years, because then they're founded two very important organizations. Kai has, I guess, also a book with him, which they both published together. The name is The Way to the Ecological Tax Reform. And this book presents a major approach of how we envision and suggest an ecological tax reform to be designed. Unfortunately, it was logically not visible to have also on the picture we showed before in Tana. So it's great that Kai has a book now with him. So we see the book and see that it's a common work they did together. Of course, thank you, Kai, for showing the book. I mean, we know from Meadow, from Club of Rome, that a book can't change the world, even if it shows the reality in very drastic forms and fact figures and numbers. But what could be the right, and also this is a question, of course, also for Hannah, what is important to bring the people into the other, on the other path, on the path that they understand that sustainability shouldn't be used as a buzzword, that sustainability is super important and we can't live without, that it even needs more a kind of regenerative sustainability if we want to still live in a world worth living in. And I would like to illustrate it with a very small story, as you know, both that I spent some time in India currently, and the first day being there, meeting Austrian woman from the in the 60s, which fought against nuclear power in her younger ages with her daughter, which told me in her first sentence, "I think I'm different." I said, "Oh, that's great. What does it mean?" She said, "Oh, I'm in a group of people, we all studied, and we are coming all from very important families, but we are against capitalism. We just hate capitalism. We fight against that." And I said, "Yeah, but for what?" She said, "It's just against capitalism." And I said, "Yeah, but what is your alternative?" She said, "First, capitalism has to be removed, and then everything good can come." So I found this a bit shocking, a very qualified young woman with this positioning without any idea to discuss because of lacking of arguments. So my question once again, what do you think? What does our society and our economy needs of concrete messages to drive it to the better in Germany, but also international?
What you just said, against capitalism, what the Australian lady said, I think it is a big mistake if the green movement falls into this trap, right and left. And because for reasonable people, common sense people, there are good policies and bad policies, pragmatic policies, but right or left are categories of the past. In France, they may still live on this old systems, but in Germany not. And the Green Party in Germany became important and in power in Stuttgart, for example, when they moved to the center and when they dropped this old schisma, right or left or left or right. I think this is wrong.
Kai?
Yes, I agree on that, of course. And it's really about getting solutions done and not being against something without alternatives. You have to have a picture of what do you envision to have instead of the capitalism, for example. And I think it's not really the capitalism, but it's really the market economy we have to address and getting the prices right. Because then the chance is that people do the right thing, even if they do not think about whether they are environmentally conscious or whether they would like to do it. They simply do it because it is profitable. It pays off. And then the entire economy would be shifting in the right direction. You can imagine this as being country like that, everybody who's environmentally friendly running against uphill. Now we have to shift the level playing field, and then most of the people are running down automatically in the right direction. That is the secret about the market economy. Therefore, I believe in it.
Kai, when we started 30 years ago this tax reform business, our idea was when then the oil price was below $10 the barrel. It was very, very low. And therefore, let's prepare for the future when the prices go up. Let's become more efficient and let's slowly and gradually make the increases so that the industry can adapt to it, can plan. But then we had this terrible Ukrainian war, the attack of the Russians again, and now the energy prices, gas prices skyrocketed, and this creates some problems for some industries.
Yes, exactly, Kai.
I completely agree. But on the other hand, if we look back 30 years, indeed, $10 per barrel, that was, of course, nothing nowadays. But we managed to introduce the CO2 price in Germany back in 2021. And ever since, increasing it stepwise, announced in a predictable way so that every company, every household can assume that in advance whenever there's a new commodity to be bought or anything to be planned or consumed. And that means companies also have the incentive to now already produce and research on the most modern, efficient, renewable commodities they need, so that people will also buy them because they know prices will go up sooner or later. And that's exactly what the market economy charm is about.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think also, I think we are lead alternatives. And it looks like that people start understanding that sustainability is not a buzzword, but sustainability can be a life mover if we do it right. Do you think they got it? I mean, I have in my mind a Völkel juice where there is on a Tetra Pak a print of a former Germany's Next Top Model, which says, I'm from Bolivia, and I tell you that 1 cent of this Tetra Pak buying goes to Bolivian and jungle, and the Tetra Pak is super economy friendly. Do things like this help to raise awareness in the right direction?
Well, there are many, many good examples, and Tetra Pak also gave good donations to WWF. I remember conversations with the then owner of Tetra Pak. Yes, there are many, many good examples. But if I look, I'm 87 years old, so that means I have an overview over the whole green movement. And in the 60s of the last millennium, we created NGOs, WWF, Greenpeace. Some years later, we had hundreds and hundreds of environmental ministers. And if I look back at this, many, many years, and ask myself, did we stop the destruction? Did we become sustainable? Do we leave a better world to our children? The answer is clearly no. And that is why the youngsters become so angry. And I think, but if I look how parents today educate their children. It's so much better than we have been educated in the past, you see. And now the parents are so conscious. Children are, some schools are much better than schools in the past. So my hope is that we don't leave a better world to the children, but a better children to the world. And that they that discuss with a youngster about sustainability is much easier than to discuss with a 50 or 60 year old one.
You're so right. And just thinking about my own at home, who's telling me with as a 6 years old, how I can avoid plastic waste. And why it is so important that kids are diverse and that each kid is right as different as it is. So this is great if we get more of this. We, I think, need to get it more into schools education, right?
It's a bit long term, huh?
Yes. I mean, we have upcoming now the WEF in Davos 2025. And would you say that meetings like WEF or COP, that these are places which are important to drive the world for the better? I mean, you know that critics raise loud about these airplanes flying there, about people just meeting there for their reputation.
No. I know from good sources that Professor Schwab had tried to bring NGOs to the meetings in Davos, and then he has been stopped by donors and big companies from all over the world. They stopped him, and he had to stop his good initiative.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, that's indeed a shame. I think NGOs are very necessary indeed to exactly have that critical voice, because otherwise we would not have seen a certain progress. Not that we are at the end of what we need to achieve, but we've come quite far already. Like I said before, with the renewable energies and so on, and without the initiative from NGOs, from think tanks, from entrepreneurs who invent innovative technologies, we would not be there where we are now already.
But they will not be invited in Davos, you see.
I mean, before I was also not sure, but do you think it's important? And I mean, having had the COP in Baku, for example, many people protested against having it at a location like this. Do you think this is right, or should we extra go with this to locations like this to show to the world where there has to be a change, just as Dubai, Baku?
Well, I think, yes, we need to go also to those places where it is not easy at all and where we need the most progress actually to happen. So the more we have to go into these places, this does not mean that we accept their general conditions, their general politics and so on, but we need to deliver the message there. And that's why we have to go to those places to convey them our message and to convince them that, yes, even though we do not accept your political circumstances, your regime maybe, but still we need to address the people there. We need to see that they also have hopes for their children, and we need to have a better environment also in their areas. And that's why we need to go there. It does not mean that I would love to go there, but at least we have to see we are one planet, and therefore they also belong to that planet. And there can be changes possible. We've seen that in other countries. So you never know when this happens, when the moment is right, that a change happens.
I'm frustrated by the fact that they only mainly discuss financial issues, how much do and who has to pay to under less developed countries. And this is not the main issue. I think the developed countries have to do, their charity begins at home. They have to give a better example to the rest of the world. The people in Indonesia and in Africa, I have been traveling for WWF in these countries. They know exactly what sustainability is, even without lectures and explaining and teaching. They know if you cut the forest in the next hills, they will have no water. They know this already, right. and so they we have to support them, but we have to, above all, give a better example by doing a better job on our emissions here in our industrial world.
I completely agree with you. Yes. And I always think that it's important to give a sample on your own, a personal example, just by, for example, writing a book as you did, or spreading the word as you do. Going into your personal life, and I would like to ask first, Kai, which experience had the greatest impact on you in 2024?
Well, thank you for that good question, because indeed last year was probably the year with most impact for me, as I was modernizing an old building and equipping it with clay walls, but wow, making it also climate positive, which means we installed a 10 kilowatt peak photovoltaics, an electricity storage, and a heat pump. And that is the most advanced that you can do currently, as I understand. So I've invested in my lifetime now, and hopefully this pays off at a certain moment. But already now we feel so blessed by that. And I feel much better, of course, knowing that I'm climate positive.
I can imagine, and I think it pays off, because you see how much you can save with just solar energy, with all these passive energy creators, which just the nature gives us. And I think this should be a role model for each and everybody who can do this.
And on top of that, first we have done a large insulation program. So we insulated the house and brought down the energy consumption by 85%. Wow. And then the remainder is easy to equip with renewable energy. So in this sense, it's a very good combination also of renewables and efficiency, because we need both. They're both parts of one equation.
That sounds great. And I think it's something a lot of people should look at their own home and see how much is possible, even if you just have a small balcony and can place their solar energy, if you can work with solar lamps or something like this. Hannah, in the idea of sustainability, what experience was the greatest or had the greatest impact on you in last year?
Last year, I was... The greatest impact was, the war in Ukraine. That impacted me, the refugees and the effect on our society, the government which fell apart, and we are in a crisis, definitely in a crisis. And I'm afraid, and I want to help the green movement not to fall back too much, because there are other priorities who have become more prioritarian, and the environment has a difficult job now to remain on the top of the agenda, because other security issues and the wars are dominating the agenda. And this is the major impact, and I would like to correct this.
Then I hope that with our energy we can bring together, we can master many things and can develop many things to the better. It was a pleasure, Hannah and Kai, to have you here, and I wish we could have more time to talk further about this important topics, because it's about our everyday life, it's about our everyday ecosystem, it is about our everyday quality and what we are used to have for every day. So I hope for us that the world understands our mission, that they have all heard us and get maybe some ideas from this. So thank you very much again to being here. I'm looking forward to our further cooperation, doing together, and having a great start into New Year's. Thank you so much for being here, Hannah Erlinghaus and Kai Stiegelmeis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My best stories I didn't tell.
Oh my God. Okay. We need to do a second series. So the best yet to come. So stay tuned for the best next ones. And we have to discuss definitely later on, Hannah and Kai, when the best stories will be heard from you next time. So thank you very much for being here today. After a very small break of 2, 3 minutes, we see each other and hear each other here again. So stay tuned because after the break, we have here Sebastian Copeland. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips. Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So after a super interesting and challenging talk with the sustain internationally worldwide well-known sustainability experts Hannah Ehringhaus and Kai Schliegelmich, we continue with sustainability and combine it with arts. Sebastian Copeland is an internationally renowned photographer, adventurer, and environmental activist who has dedicated his career to documenting the impact of climate change on polar region. I'm very happy to have you here. Welcome in our show, Sebastian.
Thank you, Annabelle. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So I know that there is plenty of time we need normally to talk about your different parts of your life. And today we would like to focus a little bit on your not only photographs, which have graced the pages of National Geographic and exhibited in galleries worldwide, but are also kind of wake-up call. And you brought a wake-up call, your wake-up call with you, which was also printed as a book. I'm very happy that you did this because you combine in a way which is one of unique, not only the challenges everybody has to face, but the poles or between beautiness of nature and of course that was happening to the is happening to the nature due to us, due to our hands. Maybe you can show us the book, the Arctic.
Okay. Yeah. So this is this is the latest book. It's called the Arctic, A Darker Shade of White, and it's it basically chronicles about 35 years of polar travel, and covers a variety of topics and geographies and is it upside down? It is upside down there. So anyhow, it's better to see in person, but it has a that's interesting actually. The cover that they sent is upside down. That explains it. Anyhow, this is the book. There's a foreword by Jane Goodall, and you know, and an essay in there by me that essentially does a 360 on the polar regions from its history, both in terms of paleoclimatology and then anthropology as well, and then more recently in its geopolitical implications.
Yeah, I would also say it's a kind of urgent call to action, your book, and I mean you published it against the backdrop of that what you saw, and what you and you try to bring it into picture, and you capture the stark beauty of the region while shedding light on its transformation due to climate change, and the Arctic, often seen as a pristine wilderness, is rapidly losing its icy mantle, affecting not only local ecosystems but the planet as a whole. With your lens, you give breathtaking landscapes and show them, but also the harsh reality of their disappearance. Have you felt last trip to the Arctic a very special urgency, which brought you to the book, or what was the point of knowing the world needs this book urgently?
Well, I mean, the any studies in climate transformations are, of course, measured against time. So you notice the transformations after multiple visits that are spread over a period of time. In my case, I've been traveling there for more than 30 years. So the incremental changes become much more noticeable when you compare them in decadal timescales. And just as strongly are the testimonials from the locals. And I spent a lot of time in northern Greenland lately, and it was in northern Canada before, but with Inuits and Inuggets and the tribes that have been living in these regions for thousands of years and whose traditions and whose way of life is entirely dependent on the external conditions. So they have essentially shaped their protocols of survival relative to the conditions. It's beautiful. Of course, it's less beautiful when these protocols start to fall apart. And along with it comes the influence of Western industries and not just remotely, but also locally. And so you can see progressively the breakdown of cultures that have been, you know, that can be up to 35, 45,000 years old. Which is the time when populations move from Asia into the Arctic regions.
What do you think, Sebastian, could we do as a society, as a Western society, to bring more attention to this? Because, I mean, your pictures are so challenging. Looking at your pictures, it should give us goosebumps and should give us the call to action to drive it to the better. What further do we need?
Well, look, to solve the culture war that exists between our outdated industrial world and nature, there's multiple paths. But first, I think we need to celebrate the best of what is humanity and the best that is what is nature. And as far as us, I think that is vision, empathy, and innovation. You know, it was Einstein, I think, who says that we're not going to solve you know, today's problems by applying yesterday's solutions. And it seems to me that we are still very, very much working on a model that was defined by the Industrial Revolution and to a large extent is still the dominant mode of energy production. And so certainly, you know, we have a lot of alternatives, and luckily they are growing, and these are good alternatives. But there's obviously a lack of economic and political commitment to scale that to where it needs to be in order to reach the targets that we all seem to be agreeing need to be reached, but do very little in order to get there.
Yeah, and by the question I told you, ask you about your which experience had the greatest impact on you in last year. You also mentioned the Ukraine's war. How is it to look at this with the eyes of a photographer, but also with the eyes of somebody who likes to drive the world to the better, to see what a wall like this moves with the country itself, with the people, with the nature, with values.
Right. So, I mean, the war machine is tragic on so many different fronts. You obviously, you know, have the human dimension, which is deplorable and graphically cruel. But you also have, you know, the destruction of many things. First of all, faith in institutions on the one hand, but nature as well. You know, the one thing that we don't ever talk. We talk about the human toll, which is absolutely abhorrent. But there's also the toll on nature, and you know, the displacement of emissions just from the war machine. But you know, for me, 2024 was not just Ukraine. It's a 3-year conflict that is absolutely heartbreaking. But you know, we saw a similar type of tragedy develop in the Middle East, and with just as much atrocities being shelled out on both sides, and then as well as that, we have this ongoing conflict in regions of Africa where the nature of a famine is probably the greatest that it has been since the 1970s. And it is absolutely really immoral and hard to imagine how we could be there in 2024 with the resources that we have to actually produce excess food. But, you know, we're on par to see 250 million people really at the border of what is humanly possible when it comes to survival. So 2024 has been a tough year, and I'm going to leave the U.S. Yeah. elections out of the conversation just for now. But this, of course, took a lot of oxygen out of other discussions, notably climate.
Yes, exactly. What was your most challenging experience in last year, if you look personally back?
Yeah, look, for me, and you know, I lived for 40 years in the US. I'm English. I'm an English national and French, so I have three passports. And but I have to admit that the most, and it's a, again, it's a hard pick. I've just given you three instances which are absolutely, you know, earth shattering in their tragic implications. But looking at what a long-term implication is, and for me, what was probably the most emotionally difficult was the U.S. election, because its implications have far-reaching consequences. It somehow gives a green light. I always say that when the U.S. sneezes, the rest of the world gets the flu, and you know, when you have that level of disconnect in, you know, what we had grown accustomed to, civil discourse, to, you know, we all understand that, you know, politics are corrupt, but there's always been a curtain. There's, you know, there's always been protocols that at least disguise it somehow. But when you see the sheer ugliness of what has happened, and particularly, you know, the support, the popular support for it, and I don't blame the people. I think that generally speaking, and this is a very important point in this world that is so polarized and divided, is I really believe in the good of people. In fact, if you spend any time with the majority of people, they will tend to be kind, empathetic, generous, but yet they're bound to politics that are abhorrent, and they do so out of fear, right? Mm-hmm. So we're in this world where now this prevalence of fear is leading people to make decisions that are a complete break from historical protocol. And of course, there has been precedence. Of course, there always is precedence. And generally, that precedence has led us to some of the worst chapters in history.
Yeah, that's right. You're believing in good. You're going to Arras and the world where you take photographs to open the people the eyes. What are your next plans for doing so, to spread the word to the people?
You know, I'm lucky that my work is entrenched in this discussion. So everything that I do in the end is messaging. You know, there are three drivers of transformation. You have policy, innovation, and marketing. I sort of end up in the marketing camp. You know, I'm science trained, and of course, you know, photography is nothing if not the best form of marketing, because it informs a very, very precise moment in time, and you know, it captures time, and God knows these times need to be captured. So I would say that beauty is the link that unifies us with nature, and it gives the arguments to commit the mind to a program of action. So with me, photography is a way really to transport this. And you know, when we fail to listen to nature, photography can make us hear with our eyes and draw that emotion in, and at least open a door to dialogue, to something that, you know, for many people may seem quite abstract, you know, in the polar regions, to many people feel distant, in spite of the fact that they are the canary in the coal mine and should be considered to be, you know, a harbinger and a cautionary tale.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Going back to your book, because we are coming, unfortunately, today to an end, you said that Jane Goodall wrote the foreword in your book. And it's not just, I think, some ideas for driving the world a better place, what you have in common with her. She's exactly 30 years older than you, right? But there's much, much more to say when it comes to that, what brings you together. Do you want to share a few words of that with us?
Yes, well, Jane has always been a role model to me and to so many. I grew up with, you know, reading. My mother was fond of her. And so as a child, I was aware of what, you know, her, you know, work on primates was. And she's always been a champion for the natural world. So she remains one of my heroes. I'm so glad to have her grace the pages of my book.
Thank you so much, Sebastian. It was such a pleasure to have you here. We will have you in a couple of weeks here again, and I'm happy to talk further to you. Meanwhile, I wish you all the best for your trip, your current family trip, and hope that you have a lot of sun, good weather, and a lot of snow, of course. There, I want to thank you all for being part of today's episode of We Empower, the weekly radio show, which is dedicated to celebrating the strength, resilience, and limitless potential of us, of human around the globe. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey, sharing real stories of triumph, upliftment, and empowerment, what we can do in our daily lives to make a world and a planet a better place. So thank you very much for being part of our community. And until next time, keep shining and empowering others in whatever you do. Together we rise. Thank you very much for being here, listening, and taking part.
Thank you, Annabelle.
Ich wär so gern dabei gewesen, doch ich hab viel zu tun. Lass uns später weiterreden. Da draußen brauchen sie...